Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find all the great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends where you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. And also, I can remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best dressed fan all year long. And the important thing to know right now is that they've got a sale going on through the weekend that you can get a ton of extra stuff for, because they've got all this officially licensed vintage looking collegiate apparel. And Thursday, the day that the tournament kicked off, Friday, the day you're listening to this, Saturday and Sunday, you can get $30 off any of their college varsity jackets, 20% off their college fleece jackets, and $10 off any of your college unisex t-shirts. If you're like me and didn't realize they put out a really dope print for the Texas Women's Big 12 Championship to commemorate the last one, grab that. It's great. All of those are available. And I don't know if they'll allow you to stack it, but if they can, use the code 101215 at checkout, TEN1215. Try to get 15% off any, non-sale items. So you can't get 50% off those, but if you buy something else that's not on sale, why would you though, right? I think 15% is probably more than $10. I'm going to figure it out. Whichever one gets you the better discount. Either way, go to charliehustle.com, check out some of the cool stuff they've got, and rock the horns. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's on the south side of heaven, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Ooh, okay. So I like you went Ryan Bingham over Brooks and or Dunn. I thought maybe you were going to come in with a Fat Tony neon version, because if you don't understand that reference, first of all, it's multi-layered. Brooks and Dunn are playing at the University of Texas, but the best version of Neon Moon was when Houston rapper Fat Tony put Two Shorts Blow the Whistle over it, and when he was DJing, and a new genre of Beautiful was born.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity there, but we highlighted Brooks and Dunn on the Twitter, so I figured we could highlight Ryan Bingham on the podcast, because you and I are big Ryan Bingham fans, yeah, as well. If you're not up to...
And I know this is not a Ryan Bingham podcast or a country music podcast or a music podcast, but it is wild to me that Ryan Bingham is this enormous star because he's on Yellowstone. Like, yeah. I remember this, like, dude hanging out with my brother in San Marcos and playing shows of, 20. He's like a little guy who just has a, huge voice and writes some soulful ballads for years, and then all of a sudden he is exploded. And good on you. Good on you, Ryan Bingham.
He feels Austin-ish, right? Like, he's from New Mexico, grew up in Houston area, right? Westfield, I think, if I remember. I did some research on this because I was dunking on somebody talking about Texas country one day. It's fine. Neither here nor there. Speaking of dunking, though, wasn't a ton of dunking in the Texas and Colorado State game. But Texas won in a relatively pain-free manner. It was got a little bit weird in the second half, but Texas managed to get out of that with a dub. 56-44 over the Rams in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So an opportunity for Texas to make a run. We still don't know who's won the other game, but they've got potentially Tennessee coming up in that Saturday matchup. Colorado State is probably the proud proud recipient or proud owner of two of the ugliest basketball games that I've ever watched. Like, that UVA one, I think that UVA one was ugly. I think this Texas Colorado State one was like a defensive battle. I feel like that was more what this was. These are two teams that can play a little defense, right? We forget, Rodney Terry skews more defense than his predecessor, but also they can still play some defense.
Yeah, skews more offensive. Gerald, I have two analogies for you, and I think both of these are apt. The first, because you've got kids, you understand if one person brings home a stomach bug, by the end of the next day, everyone in the house is basically just firing out both ends, just making a mess of themselves.
Make it look like the end of The Thing, if you are a sci-fi fan.
Everything. So basically, I'm saying in one analogy, UVA infected Colorado State, who the infected thing us.
Keeps going.
Yeah, exactly. Who infected us in this game was. Tough on the stomach. The second analogy is, Gerald, I know you love a fantasy football. So far, and we're recording this as immediate post-game reaction, so not all games on the opening day of the March Madness tournament have happened. But Gerald, do you know how many teams, fantasy football style, the main complaint in fantasy football? Texas got a win this week. They're 1-0. But do you know how many teams they would have outscored out of games that have completed so far?
None. Well, maybe one,
of course, Colorado State.
Yeah,
just one other team scored less points, fewer points rather, than the Texas Longhorns. Their only other win would have been against the Mississippi State Bulldogs, who only managed 51 points. Obviously the low score was Colorado State. I mean, it like I said, that's the most common fantasy football. It's like, how's this guy 9-0, but he's ninth in you know, points scored? It seems ridiculous, but there you go. It worked for Texas. No, I'll leave the analogies aside and just say, yes, Gerald, I like your generous description of this as just a defensive battle. You can't score 11 points just on good defense. It also was Colorado State just being inept in the first half, and I'll take it because Texas was too. I mean, they went to halftime with more combined turnovers than first half field goals. A lot of the ire will be driven towards Colorado State scoring 11 points in the first half and how you know, that's the lowest since 2008 in a NCAA tournament game. But Texas was not good in this game, and you win your clunkers, right? And for every, you know, bit of intensity, and we'll talk about some of the positives and the good plays that actually happened, this was a clunker for Texas. I mean, the turnovers, the three-point shooting, they were single digits in three-point percentage. The, you know, not getting what you expect from your stars, like this was just not a great game for Texas. But you know, they won nonetheless, so you have to, you know, you tip your cap.
Whether you win by an inch or by a mile, winning is winning. A wise philosopher told me that one time in a movie theater. No, like it was an ugly game. Like, there's no two ways around it. There was defense played. There was also very little offense played, at least by one of the teams, right? When you look at, you mentioned it, if Colorado State hits a cut, they were 6 of 24 from 3-point. Texas was even worse, somehow 1 of 14. But, like, that was... Again, they could not buy a bucket in a lot of instances, but they've never really been that great of a three-point shooting team. But really, for me, like, Texas played physical down low. They held them to a 17 of 58 overall performance on the night. So they were 9 of 34 from everything inside the three-point line. That's really what, like, we talk about Texas getting in foul trouble because Texas plays really physical defense. And that's part of what this game was. Yes, was it ugly? But also, some of that may have been intentional, right? Texas scored a ton of points off turnovers in this game. Texas had 9 steals in this game, right? There's a lot to be said of how Texas played well in this game. Like, I'm not going to excuse them only hitting 1 3-pointer, but they didn't really need to hit much because they were able to get what they wanted. Dylan Disu's not going to go 5 of 18 in most games, right? He's also shouldn't be shooting 6 3-pointers. That's another conversation for another day. Max Asmus is not going to go 1 of 6 in most games from 3-point range, right? So, like, if you had told me that Dylan Disu is 5 of 18 from the floor, shoots 6 3-pointers, Max Asmus is 5 of 15 from the floor, I'd tell you that Texas gets dog-walked in this game. Sure. So the fact that they were able to manage to push through the ugliness of this game is a good thing. Now, is that going to hold up against Tennessee on Saturday? That's neither here nor there. But as it stands right now, Texas did enough to win and win in advance, right?
Yeah, and I need Disu to bounce back for sure. Asmus, you know, we'll get streaky. He'll get hot. I see that coming. You know, I need my guy Dylan Mitchell to not airball 8-foot jumpers. It was just a bad shooting game all around. I mean, 1 for 14 comes out to 7% from the three. That's unspeakably bad. That you can't. It's hard to replicate that. The free throws also, right? 11 for 17 is only 64%. They weren't particularly good from the line in a game that, you know, towards the end started to get into one of those free throw contests. Luckily, Texas had a cushion and a lead, but. Just all in all, wholesale, and maybe it's the 8 days off because they went out early in the tournament and they were rusty. They just didn't look great. I'll give credit to, you know, the runs, and again, not to continue an earlier metaphor, but in this game were pretty intense. And after going down early, it looked like, wow, this could be a really ugly game, 8-2. You know, it ends up being that 25-2 run holding Colorado State 8.5 minutes without a field goal. That run was sparked by the guys coming off the bench. It wasn't the starters, the known names. It was Brock Cunningham, you know, making plays. He had a coast-to-coast steal score in the other end, which, you know, was hilarious. Just played some good annoying. He did get the Brock flagrant later in the game, but just good, tough, annoying, physical defense. It looked like, you know, Colorado State, one of the best, I think they're fifth in the country in a turnover to assist ratio, or assist to turnover ratio, I should say, on a normal night. I don't know what Texas saw on the tape, but they just said grab the ball out of their hands. There was multiple plays where Colorado State player had the ball in either Texas quickness or length or strength or whatever it is, just ripped the ball from them, just stole it. And that's, you know, that was something that was coached, that was expected, I thought was great. But it was also that energy. It was Brock doing that. It was, you know, DC made some great plays on the defensive end, even though his offense wasn't good. And then Kendall Weaver was the guy for me, right? And we've said this a couple times, and we had it in our, you know, our BON Slack, and you know, we've texted this at multiple times during the season. Like, you want so badly for Kendall Weaver to be a superstar because he's so lovable. He does all the right things. He's got incredible athleticism, and works his tail off and throws his body on the line. Like, he just does all of the things that you just want this guy so badly to be so good. And I know he wants it too. So I think as he settles into his game and grows a little bit, he has potential to truly be a star. He has star intangibles, like the defense, the energy, the athleticism. Like, it's just growing a little bit. But I think he was honestly one of the differences in this game, initiating the early run, playing great defense. Texas had a great strategy on, to Terry's credit, again, one on just taking the ball from him, and two on Colorado State. They basically said, okay, Stevens is their best player, and they put Hunter or Weaver on him the entire first half and basically full court press just him, just let it stuck in his pocket the entire trip up the floor, didn't let them even get the ball into their point guard's hands to initiate the offense, cutting him off at all times, running through screens to stay with him. Like, you could tell he was frustrated. He got an early foul where he just pushed Weaver into another player and, like, kind of neck chopped him because he was so frustrated that he wasn't getting the ball, wasn't getting his looks and his shots. Now, when he did get them, they weren't falling either. But that absolutely also contributed to the 11 points, as they just flummoxed and came and out coached the Colorado State coaching staff. And so you give some credit to Rodney Terry and the Texas coaching staff on how they drew this one up. But again, it takes those guys making the hustle plays, making the effort plays to execute that when the offense, when you're just not seeing the ball go through the hoop.
Yeah, I mean, you got to win your ugly games, right? They won an ugly game, and that's how you win an ugly game. So for Texas, they still have they don't know who their opponent is yet. Tennessee is taking the floor as we speak. Been a rough day for the SEC, though, in the tournament. Kentucky just got bounced by Oakland.
Did they?
As we finished recording, 80-76. It literally just went final as we're recording. John Calipari may have to find a new job here in the next couple of
I think I had them weeks. In the Elite Eight, man. That's woof. Tough. Anyways, not woof. Important. Bracket woof. Isn't important.
Woof. Yeah. So, we'll have an update for you, obviously. On Monday, we'll let you know what how Texas fares against presumably Tennessee, but I don't want to call it too early. So we'll talk about that in our next pod. Another thing we'll talk about in our next pod that will get it pretty quickly. The number 3 women swimming and diving national championships are happening right now, and Texas is competing, goes Wednesday through Saturday. They're in 5th place after one day. The competition is continuing as we record right now, so obviously have you updated on that. The men will be next week, Wednesday through Saturday, and we'll have some more special content for you around that We also want to, because things have happened between then and now, do a quick down the 40 part deux, down the 40 acres bus, down the Riverside bus. I don't know what we want to talk about. Whatever we want to talk about it. But softball, run ruled a top 20 team this week, 10-0 in six, a combined four hit shutout of Florida State, which was one of the best hitting offenses in the country. And then Texas obviously put a bunch of balls over the wall in that one.
Yeah, I think it should be noted, this kind of, after they wobbled a bit, the streak that they've been on the bats, they're averaging 10 a game. But more importantly, the pitching against, we talked about how good BYU was, a top 10 offense, and then you have Florida State, who's top 20 batting average, seventh highest scoring offense in the country, gets blanked. They basically have responded, I think, 40-3 in the next four games after wobbling a bit and losing it. It's exactly what you want to see. Give credit to Mac Morgan and Estelle Check, who came in and did great, but Morgan has now held opponents scoreless in 10 of her 12 appearances. Like, she's there's a competition for who the ace is on the staff, because there's a lot of pitchers throwing really well, but there's no competition for who the ace is with the bats, although there's some great. We've had two players with like 17 plus game on base streaks, one currently going on, the buck stops with Reese Atwood, who was 2-for-3 in this one, her 11th home run on the season, tying her career high last year. I think it took her 170 at-bats to do it. She had four RBIs as well, to be the first player in the country to reach 50 RBIs, and she's done all this in just 85 plate appearances. The previous record for Texas for a player to get to 50 RBIs was 131 appearances by Lindsey Stevens, a legendary name there, in 2014. So she's got record book stuff in her sights. Really, really just, you know, the entire team hitting well, but, you know, when you have a singular focus player who, you know, hey, if I can get on base, she's going to drive me in. That's really, really great to feel for a team that's, you know, when they're good, they're as good as anyone in the country, and have had one little week of wobble. And like I said, I think they've responded about as well as you could have asked.
Yeah, they really did. Fourth true road game against the top 25 team, and they have run ruled twice. They're 3-1 in those matchups. 25-3 on the year, which is the best, or ties for the best start under Mike White since that 2021 year. So on the other diamond, baseball also got a bounce back in their work. The first one was a little iffy. They were down 5-3 in the ninth, took it to extras, and then walked it off in the 10th. Meanwhile, they got a little bit of energy out on the Wednesday game and just absolutely blasted Air Force 12-3 in that Wednesday matchup.
Yeah, basically from the ninth inning through Wednesday, they looked like the Texas team we expected. They didn't necessarily start that way. You wondered if Paul Skeens was back at Air Force the way that Air Force dominated the opening part of that game. But a lot of Texas fight. Like, I think the team needed it. I honestly think David Pierce needed it, right? Mm-hmm. Losing a midweek after you know, losing to a series to Washington. Basically, the fight back they had to sneak by and not get swept by Washington, and then a fight back against Air Force, showed that the team believes in something this year. They still think they have something to play for and fight for. So, yeah, I mean, I think in that first game, there was positives. Jared Thomas, 4-for-6 with two doubles and an RBI. Jalen Flores, 3-for-5 with a game-tying home run in the ninth. Two RBI, and then again, seeing a freshman do it. He's usually known for his speed, but freshman infielder D. Kennedy, with bases loaded, gets that single into the outfield that, you know, if it wasn't a walk-off, probably would have scored at least two. So really, really great ending to an otherwise awful game, and then again seven runs in the seventh inning to really seal home the next game and get that midweek series win that they really, really needed. And I loved that they did it against Air Force in game two with some of the less heralded guys, right? Or maybe the younger guys, with Max Beliu 2-for-3 with a double home run and three RBIs, Ryan Galvan 2-for-4 and a homer and three RBIs, and then our guy Will Gasparino 2-for-3 with a double home run and four RBIs. So you love to see it. It's not just top of the order, Jared Thomas, Peyton Powell, like it's been for most of the year. You like to see some of these other bats getting hot. That's a good sign to me as we look forward.
Yeah, this is a team that could have folded, and they did the exact opposite. They really bucked up, they bowed up, and they made some hay for themselves. And so big ups to them as they decided to shake it off and keep things moving in the right direction.
Okay, Gerald, now it's time for a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. And we start with one of our favorites in a long time on the 40 Acres, our guy Leo Neugenbauer, the Nuge, named the USTFCCCA, all the letters of the acronym, 2024 Field Athlete of the Year. Huge honor for a man who wins as many events as they let him compete in, a heptathlon in the indoors, a pentathlon in the outdoors, a super-duper quad-mega quintuplon, which I just made up. But he would do that, too. There's no amount of events that he won't do, and he'll just go win them all.
I mean, I couldn't come up with a good German joke, but yeah, I mean, he's incredible, right? He joins Ryan Krauser, Don Kilmartin, and Trey Hardy as the only Longhorns to win the award, which is just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, those names are Mount Rushmore-y type names for Texas track and field, so just great to see that.
Absolutely. Another guy who's on putting himself in the Mount Rushmores of various Longhorn programs, definitely moving into that Mount Rushmore of golfers, and also in the Mount Rushmore of guys who I've played golf against. Scottie Scheffler wins the – I haven't played golf against. I saw him at the Cowboy Cup. Wins the Players' Championship at the TPC Sawgrass in dramatic fashion. Coming back from a five-shot deficit with a final round, 8-under-64 on Sunday to post a one-shot victory. He missed a couple putts that could have secured it, took it to the final group. Player had a chance to sink a putt to send it to a playoff, and just an absolute just heartbreaker for anyone who wasn't rooting for Scotty, which I imagine is tens of people out there, because everyone loves Scotty, literally everyone. But it's the reason, like Chris Conti says, that sunsets are burnt orange. God is a Longhorn. It didn't go in, and Scotty got to take the win home, got to do some amazing things. Most importantly, got to win in front of 87 years young grandma, who walked the 18 with Scotty on Sunday, prompting the Twitter account, which is, this is, if you know me, this is everything to me, at Shooter McGavin tweeted, "Trailing by four strokes on Sunday, grandma shows up and he wins the tournament. Story sounds familiar." The Happy Gilmore grandma arc was not one I had on the bingo card.
I mean, 100th official PGA Tour victory for Texas men's golf in the 98-year history. I've seen people saying that Scottie Scheffler right now is on like a... Like the when we started to feel like Pat Mahomes was about to run the NFL, that's what people are feeling Scottie Scheffler is at right now. And it makes sense. Like, that's the kind of, you know, you don't want to put him in the LT gray realm at this point, but like being able to do what he did on Sunday and really be that force is how you dominate the league and how you dominate the tour. And so his ability to do that, especially again with grandma in tow, great to see it.
Yeah, six top tens in seven events, including two wins this year. His eighth career win, all in the last 26 months. Like, you feel like he's been here forever. This run that he went on, just it only started a little over 2 years ago. I mean, it's when you say El Tigre, is to avoid saying, you know, the more commonly understood English animal name of a certain player. It's close. I went and looked at it. I'll just say it, Tiger's best years, and though he's not exactly on par with a single of Tiger's best years, he's right now where they're at in their careers at a point that he could get close, right? And again, someone needs to come up and challenge him, and golf is an interesting thing because no one wins all the time. But I mean, the short window where Scotty started being great and then went to just being the undisputed number one in the world, it's pretty impressive to see. He's the first player for his money to win back-to-back Players Championship, a notoriously hard course with that, you know, obviously iconic 17th island hole. He stayed out of the water, stayed out of the hazard things Rory couldn't do. Like he just, I don't know if it's the beard, he was locked in, even though he had KT tape on his neck and was struggling, had someone massaging him on the course. Like, he was struggling to still come back on the final day and play Scotty type golf for the win. Like, no pressure, no fear. He looks like the real deal for many years to come. Speaking of many years to come, Gerald, there might just be a new favorite Longhorn team for the casual I just watch NFL teams for the amount of Longhorns they have on it. For a long time, this category dominated by Seattle Seahawks, Baltimore Ravens, and others. But really, those were the heaviest of hitters. The Denver Broncos. Sean Payton absolutely throwing their hat in the ring. Denver fans notorious for owning a large swath of the country, people like in Wyoming and disparate parts of the country, in that anything around the Rockies region, basically where there's no other teams, everyone's a Broncos fan. What other national fan base can you go after? Well, why not the Texas Longhorns out here? Just brilliant, brilliant strategy, merging two gigantic fan bases. The Denver Broncos, it can't be a coincidence, just absolutely loading up on Longhorns.
My feelings on Sean Payton aside, Brandon Jones defecting from the Dolphins to go to Denver, joining Malcolm Roach, LJ Humphrey, who both signed with the team this offseason, Caden Stearns already there, PJ Locke re-signed with the team. They are, I believe, the team with the highest number of Longhorns on the roster, which means that if you are a casual NFL fan like I am, this might be your new squad.
Yeah, I mean, this is the team that no longer, but previously had Calvin Anderson, Andrew Beck. They've always had a little bit of enough to pique your interest with the Longhorns of recent note. But yeah, I think the Texans have four. They're a strong contender there, I believe, currently four. I possibly could have missed some offseason moves, but the Patriots currently with three, with Adrian Phillips, Brendan Schooler, and Calvin Anderson. But it looks like Broncos with those five are your clubhouse leader. So again, if there's any NFL free agents out there or any trades to be made, remember, we're watching. Yeah, if you're looking to get the eyeballs of Longhorn Nation, sign the Longhorns. The other one of note, Gerald, back on his preferred coast, even though he's from Hilton Head, South Carolina. His time in Buffalo is over. He's back to the West Coast. Our guy, who is it, Gerald?
Puna.
Puna Ford making his way out to the Chargers to play for Jim Harbaugh. I think Harbaugh's going to love Puna. I think he's going to love being in California. I think this makes a lot of sense. I like this move a lot.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I mean, with Aaron Donald announcing his retirement, it seems to make sense that they're going to need to backfill that position. And if they're going to look for diminutive yet powerful men, I don't feel like they come any better than Puna Ford.
I like that. Gerald, Crystal Conti, recognized for something we've known for a long time, nominated for the SBJ Athletic Director of the Year Award. I think an award well-earned, a nomination at least well-earned.
Yeah, we talked about it on Tuesday in our Bang the Drum segment. Like, Del Conte is the reason why Texas has a home field advantage in football. It's why they have Vic Schaefer. It's why they have Mike White. It's why they have all of Steve Sarkisian. It's why they have the infrastructure that they have today. So I think it's well-deserved, and honestly, maybe should have taken an earlier year.
Yeah, Director's Cups the past 2 years. But again, he's done... still a great job this year. I think his transparency with fans, of communication, of you know, getting some of these great coaches in that he has, and now there may be, you know, thoughts with Eddie Reese retiring. There's you know, I don't know. I'm not going to speak to any other openings, which may or may not be there. But you know, he's going to prove it. He's going to prove his chops, and we'll get to judge him over the next few years. But in this first phase of the Del Conte era, without a doubt, one of the best ADs. Gerald, another item that I wanted to talk about here, just needed to squeeze it in somewhere. How much do you love Bijan Robinson's bracket?
I mean, he picked Texas to go real far. I don't, it's ill-advised probably, but, you know, I appreciate him riding for the brand.
Yeah, Sweet 16 matchups of number 11 NC State versus number 10 Colorado. Texas over Creighton, and then ultimately Gonzaga to get to the Final Four, where they beat Houston, and then they beat UConn in the title game. Baylor making it in his Final Four. Grand Canyon making an Elite Eight, as well as Washington State. Interesting picks abound.
I don't know. I like it. I'm curious. The Western Kentucky over Marquette. That's a direct shot at Shaka Smart. I don't know. You know, when politicians fill out their bracket, you wonder who they're pandering to. I don't know who Bijan is pandering to. The Texas winning, I think, just because he loves Texas. But otherwise, I don't know. It's just a quirky and fun bracket, and I love that. Bijan is a celebrity enough that the NCAA March Madness account tweeted it out. He's that guy. But yeah, we'll see if you can beat Bijan's bracket. So take a look at that and see if you can, in fact, top Bijan.
So keeping it basketball, Gerald, a couple of awards to hit here. Started with basketball. We'll keep going. Max Asmus, Dylan Dessou earned spots on the NABC All-District. Eight teams, that's basically the kind of central area, similar, approximate to the Big 12. Good to see Asmus get pretty similar to those results, except Asmus got bumped up to the first team from the National Association of Basketball Coaches. Dessou making the second team. And then on the women's side, Maddie Booker named the second team AP All-American, the first Texas freshman to make that second team list.
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous year for Maddie Booker. I can't. I'm running out of superlatives for it.
Two football items, Gerald, real quick. We just had the 2025 schedule release come out yesterday. Basically, the answer was take the SEC games and flip them, which means we'll host Arkansas A&M in Vanderbilt as well as being the home game in the Red River rivalry, our four home games there against Oklahoma, and then travel to Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, and Mississippi State. Of course, we already knew the non-conference opening with Ohio State, San Jose State, and UTEP, but added that fourth non-conference because they went with eight, adding Sam Houston at DKR.
13 years in the SEC, and A&M has played Georgia how many times?
I believe that's once or twice. Once, right?
Once, yeah. They played them once.
Yeah.
2 years in the SEC, Texas plays Georgia twice.
Honestly, that's a win for the Aggies. They do not want to play Georgia. That would not be a good look for them.
I mean, they got used. That's all I'll say.
Gerald, pro days are an interesting thing. Anything stand out to you that you want to talk about from Texas's pro day?
Quinn Ewers looked good throwing for them. Mike McDaniel was there and had a great conversation with several players. Good to see head coaches deciding to make it back out to Texas. That was a staple for a long time, and so it feels like Texas is finally getting back to where it was. Jatavion Sanders only did eight on the bench, and that couldn't have been surprising to him, so I'm not sure why he participated in that, but that's not going to do a whole lot for his stock as somebody who has a little knock on himself as not being that solid of a blocker. And I want to go back and watch some film and see if most of my gripe with him about blocking is now less about his ability or willingness and more about his just like strength to do so.
Yeah, something like that could see him getting moved to wide receiver. Like that's interesting. It's almost like if you were an ace NBA prospect with millions of dollars on the line, let's call it from Europe or something, but then they were like, "All right, we'll go to the combine and you could choose what drill do you want to do?" And you can't do a left-handed layup, and you say, "Ah, I'll do left-handed layup drills." And you're like, "Well, this guy can't do the thing that is in the drill that he voluntarily chose. Cut, you know, $3 million off of his $10 million deal." I did nothing but losing money there for JT. So I think he's good enough he can get past it. But it's a weird one. I'm waiting to hear more or, you know, hear about an injury or something. It's interesting, you know, especially when you think Keelan Robinson, I think, did 22.
Ryan Watts did nine. Like, he got outdone by a defensive back.
Yeah, and a long-arm defensive back, right? You know, bench press favors those with short arms. A long-arm defensive back. I guess maybe Jatavion Sanders has long arms. He can go catch balls up really high. Maybe that's the argument here. I don't know. But anyways, yeah, I agree. It was sad to put David Ash out to pasture, but it was exciting to see Quinn throwing to the guys, and you know, a pretty good audition for him, like Gerald said, with head coaches, with GMs, with some of the top agents and scouts in the NFL, all in Austin. It was good for them to get eyes on Quinn and him to deliver. Great watching the receivers track balls. Adonai Mitchell's made it a work of art, but Xavier Worthy ran incredible routes, showed good hands. Like it he also made a catch in house slippers, which I, you know, fully endorse. But yeah, I think all in all, a good day. You know, I don't think there's as much after they dominated the NFL Combine. Not a ton of storyline coming out of that, except exactly what Gerald said, seeing those NFL folks getting here and getting excited to get looks at Texas players is awesome. And I think we need more of that in the years to come. Gerald, let's take it home with our final segment, a little bit of Godzilla-tron. What are you watching on your giant screen?
So not a ton of watching. I mentioned before, my wife and I are big Dropout watchers. So it's like $6 a month. It's the artist formerly known as College Humor. We watched, if you're a fan of like shows like Taskmaster on the BBC or Whose Line Is It Anyway on like America on ABC back in the day, or now I think it's on like Game Show Network or whatever. They've got two shows called Game Changer and Make Some Noise that are Game Changer is like it's a game show and the rules of the game change literally every, it's just a new game every week, so it's super fun to watch. Make Some Noise is a spinoff that's specifically just like it's all improvisation, improv actors improvising comedic scenes. It's super fun. We're also watching some D&D actual play. My wife has finally gotten into that, so we watch it because it's again improv actors playing D&D. It's super fun. And then I finished on the road trip back from Oklahoma Rage of Dragons, and I am still trying to parse whether or not this is recency bias. But enough people speak highly enough of this book that I feel like it's not. Rage of Dragons is probably on my top 10 to 5 books of all time. I love that book. If you are into military fantasy, if you're into Game of Thrones, if you're into fantasy books or like low magic-ish fantasy settings, if you're into non-Eurocentric fantasy books, if you like dragons, if you like brutal sword fights and big military action, if you like all of the tropes that I love, like it's such a good book. I really appreciate it. It's really good. It won a bunch of awards, so I feel validated. It's a Rage of Dragons. Real, real good. I need them to do a... People are saying they need to do a movie, but it's really... It would be better served as like a TV show, I think, on like an HBO or an even Amazon. Amazon has done a lot of high fantasy stuff. But give me... A TV adaptation, and I need me some Jaimin Hansu as one of the leads in that, as the sage elder who leads these soldiers through their training. It'll just be perfect.
I love it. I loved Game of Thrones. I loved Ian McShane's description of it. So if this has at least dragons, then that's good enough for me. You did text me saying you legitimately think I would love it, even though I was surprised how much I liked Game of Thrones. I think I've said on the show, I watched it at the first season, then went back and read the books. Not typically a fantasy or sci-fi guy, but I shouldn't pigeonhole myself because I like story, and you can often get past some of the more fantastical elements to see really pure, you know, archetypal, you know, fantastic storytelling. So might have to check that out, Gerald. And I did, like you, do some driving. Was in Round Rock to see a good friend of the show, Dan's new house. Congrats to you and your wife on the new house there. And then drove down to our hometown, saw Gerald this weekend in San Antonio. That's fantastic. But on the I-35 drive down, I did drive directly past the Drum, the Irwin Center. And it was kind of sad. It's still standing, but it's pretty much just like one last ring ready to be knocked down. The walls are imploded. It was kind of sad to drive past that on I-35. But anyways, in my driving, listened to a little bit of podcasting. Didn't have a ton of time to watch much media this past week or so. So I did listen to a podcast that I have been listening to, and I'll throw it out there because I realize I've never talked about it on here. One of the people, keeping the Dragons theme, Jason Concepcion, who got famous for his Game of Thrones podcast on the Ringer Network. Does a lot of great things. His NBA desktop was tremendous. And NBA is his original passion. He loves fantasy and he loves the NBA. But this podcast is focused just on the NBA. It's called Six Trophies with Shea Serrano, who, if you know me, you know is one of my favorite creators, authors, human beings out there. A guy who, like
you know, me grew up in San Antonio, moved to Houston to take his big boy job and kind of break in his industry being journalism, which, you know, Gerald and I loosely associate ourselves with for sure. But I just think he's one of the singular, most creative voices of our time. And he's good friends from Ringer podcasts and events and writing and different things with Jason. And so they said, "What? We both love basketball. Why don't we talk about, you know, the league?" And they do six trophies every week, which are hilariously named, and then some very funny pop culturally kind of related small trophies. Like, for instance, one is the Dominic Toretto "I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time" trophy. You know, just I love how they take a look. It's a good slice. If you're not watching a ton of NBA, slice of kind of catch up on the week. You'll see hear the stories that you have heard, what Wemby's up to with Shea, a fellow Spurs fan. But I think they're just very unbiased in their love for great basketball, and they're both very funny and irreverent, and it's a really easy listen. It's short, it's tight, they get through it, but it's just a lot of fun. I've laughed out loud multiple times listening to it, but again, it's informative as well. So couldn't recommend highly enough if you have any passing interest in the NBA or either of those two creators to check out the Six Trophies podcast.
It makes me angry that everything Shea Serrano does is good. And I mean that in the nicest of terms. Like, it is ridiculous that that man is so freaking talented. It feels like everything he touches turns to gold. And that's all I've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email. LonghornRepublicPod@gmail.com. We'll be back in your podcast feeds on Tuesday, breaking down, hopefully, Texas's next matchup in the NCAA tournament. We also may be lamenting the season and giving a wrap-up to it, depending on how things turn out on Saturday. But thank you so much for tuning in again. And until next time, hook up.
Hook up. The over-under was 143 for Texas-Colorado State. But Texas Cup?